Welcome to Eat Girl Soup. I'm Susan.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Court.
And we are three wild and crazy girls. You know what we're talking about today? Steve Martin.
Right. Apple TV Plus.
That's right. That two-part documentary. Yeah.
That's even part of the name, isn't it? A documentary in two parts.
Yes. I'm sorry. So a documentary in two parts.
In wherever y'all now keep track of what you've watched, did you count this as a limited series or as two films?
Well, on Letterboxd, it's listed there as, you know, there's one entry for it. And it has that, you know.
And I logged in twice. It's two movies.
You logged in twice?
I sure did.
Oh, I get credit twice.
Nice.
And I get credit for watching both parts. I don't know. Whatever.
Well, in the Google spreadsheet, I listed it as two films.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because there's an end.
Yes. And also, I rated one of them 1 point higher than I rated the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Dare I ask which one?
Well, I rated then a 9 and now an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I had done it as a limited series, I would have given it a 9. I loved it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I thought that they stopped then a little too soon. It's like, wait, go a couple more years.
Yeah.
No, I thought it was perfect because he stopped then at the point in time of his stand-up career. And I missed all that. I thought, oh, yeah, this is why I don't really know anything about this, because he ended it in 1980 and I was only conceived of in 1980. I only came in 1981. So I came for his film career. That's where I know him from. And we joked last time, but like I only did know him as the silver fox that he is.
Yeah.
Like I never knew him as the guy with the dark hair, even in Leap of Faith. I didn't pay attention to that because that wasn't real to me. He's a silver fox.
Yeah. And oh my gosh, though, like when he was in his hippie era and his hair was long and shaggy and he had facial hair, he was kind of hot. Not that he's not handsome the rest of the time, but he was like hot.
I mean, young and older Steve could get it.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Go young wife.
And exactly. Right? Look how young his wife is. I don't know how much younger, but of course he...
Right. The late in life family. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was perfect. And when he was talking about, he's going to go look for the girl with the book and the crossword puzzle, I was like, okay. Oh, and then she came with the crossword puzzle too. I was like, they're perfect for each other.
Yeah.
It was cool. He worked all his shit out first and got his career really out of the way and then found them, which was perfect. Yeah,
definitely. I thought it was cool, and we can go back and do this in a more methodical way in just a sec, but since we're talking about his family and now, I thought it was adorable how they showed their daughter.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like as a stick figure, just a line figure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And man, if I were them, the Steve and Anne, I would totally get that image printed out the dude has the original. Yeah. So the original and frame it of the two of them with line figure daughter in between them. That was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Drawn by Harry Bliss, his cartoonist.
Yeah. I love it.
I can't wait to get that book.
I just ordered it. It's coming Thursday.
Me too.
2 days.
Ah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looks
excellent.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll come next door and borrow it from you.
Yes. You certainly may. I'll pass it on when I'm done. But this is one I think that's going to be a keeper.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah. But like going back to like how they represented the daughter, like I love the moment when she came in the room with Anne and it was just her. It was just a stick figure. Like they didn't show her. They CGI'd in the stick figure and he was all adorable and cute with her.
Yeah.
And all you saw was a stick figure. And again, that's all you need. Like they protected her privacy, and I love that.
We couldn't even hear her voice in that scene.
Right.
Nope.
That's right.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like this
no
is
cloning
not for you.
Her. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's great.
So was there anything that you guys were surprised to learn? I think for me, was how little his parents supported his choice of career.
Oh my God. So, and how horrible his dad was about it forever. Mm-hmm. Well, you're no Charlie Chaplin. Wow. With the jerk.
Yeah.
That movie is just about universally loved.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad mm-hmm. said, well, you're no Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. And then how he put that into a play that he wrote later.
Yeah. Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked how he framed it. Like artists, like that was his pebble in a shoe. And he worked that pebble until it was gone.
Yes.
Like you work out your pain,
yeah,
like either on the page or on the screen. Like I like that metaphor.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. you can't, for most issues that we have in life, you can't just take off your shoe and dump out the pebble. I have forgotten his friend's name who used that analogy of the pebble in the shoe and how most people just dump it out, but artists keep walking around on it until they work out their pain.
Was in Martin Mull. It was so many familiar actors from back in the day. So
did it begin with an E, E, U?
E, U, H, N? I don't know. Steve, I don't
something
know.
Like that.
I don't know the first name.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah. Like that's like his partner. Not his partner. Martin's his partner.
Yeah.
we'll talk about that.
Platonic life partner?
What? Basically, pretty much.
Yeah. If we go back to part one, mm-hmm. then
mm-hmm.
I would just love to share. Okay. Well, so for a few things that really made me laugh. I mean, I was laughing throughout.
Yeah.
Just throughout. And it was like hysterical laughter, especially mm-hmm. with the then stuff, because I became aware of him when I was super young and he was on the original Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same.
So I just recognized most of that and still makes me laugh. So, but back to when he was, even before that, when he was starting his stand up, it was interesting to hear why he shaved and cut his hair and started wearing a suit
mm-hmm.
because he realized that would make his quote juvenile show or route to act be funnier, I guess, if mm-hmm. he looks like a serious adult,
like a grown man. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think he had already started going gray a little too. So
He started going gray at 25 is what I wrote down here.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Because he had just said he was 25, switched the suit. He had already started going gray. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. In later on toward the end of that one, he was giving a show in a classroom and he had always said, you know, well, I guess they were over 8 or something. Oh no, it was to the adults, but in a classroom. Y'all remember this? And he ended up taking them outside with him and they went to like a restaurant. That was the first time he took the audience outside with him.
Yes. Yes.
So he's sitting there before they go outside.
Yeah.
And the show was over and none of the adults of the audience were leaving.
Yeah.
And so he said, it's over. It's actually over. So what did that remind y'all of? Bueller.
Oh.
Ferris Bueller.
Yeah.
At the end in the post-credit scene.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, I forget his exact words. I should have looked it up before now. But what along? You're still here? Go away. Go on. Something like that. Go home or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's not that Steve made up this, you know, the idea of it's over, get out of here.
Yeah.
So he might've gotten it somewhere. Ferris Bueller might've gotten it from the main of the film, might've gotten it from somewhere else, but I feel like it might've come from Steve in that classroom.
I feel like it too, mm-hmm. because by the end of that movie, you saw people starting to mimic him. Like towards the beginning, we had seen him mimic all of his legends and heroes and include jokes. And there was one where like, I literally can't remember, but it's something that we see now today where, he didn't originate that. He got that from somewhere.
Yes.
So it was cool. Like in that first film, like we kept seeing him say, well, if I don't make it by 30, I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to quit. And like that scene that you just mentioned, like that's where everything finally clicked for him.
Right.
Like he had the same routine, like over and he would give it over and over again. And like people just wouldn't react. They didn't get it. And like he would do this thing that I guess artists do now. Like he had that camera, that old school camera, and he would take pictures of like his audience. And so I love that. And then, like you said, like people, they started following him around. Like he told them to get into a swimming pool. He was like the Pied Piper, and people just following him around.
An empty swimming pool, and they all got down in there. And what did he end up doing? He quote swam across the people.
Crowd surf.
Yes. And that, crowd surfing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, like, I guess that was euphoric, and he had that for a while, and then that got lonely for him because people know you. You're that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm. And so I also wrote down, I just loved this comment. He said that, so I don't think he had, he hadn't made it at 25 yet, of course. Mm-mm. I think he made it when he was exactly 30. So it was like the last year of testing all this out. But when he was 25, he said, or today Steve said about that, I don't remember who said it. It was Steve, but in what time period?
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, quote, "I get paid for being me."
Yeah.
Referencing back when he was only 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wasn't getting paid much, but.
Was it when he was working for the Smothers Brothers when he became a writer? Where he wrote this whole page, he gave it to them, and they only highlighted like two lines, and they said, "We'll move this here, and that'll be the joke." But like he wrote like pages and pages, and he wrote it in earnest, and he said he didn't even have an office or anything. He sat outside the writer's room.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, pitch. That's what it was. He wrote a pitch.
Okay.
I couldn't remember what the word was. I'm
that's
sorry,
right.
y'all.
That's right. So how about when he was, during his act or one of his acts, this was early on, and the intro to it was something about, I'm going to do the old joking with a friend on the phone thing. And it ended up being, so he picks up the phone as if he was making a call and said, "Hello, is Fred there?" And he's sitting there quietly and goes, "Oh." And then he said, "That was a good one." So he wasn't even the one. Like, you expect him to be the one telling the jokes to a friend on the phone, but he's sitting there listening. It just, oh my God, that has always been my kind of humor. And I don't like slapstick. And I've never considered him to be slapstick, even when he's doing all his crazy movements.
That's just him, though.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. And one more. I have two written down. I'll just go with one. So his thing, I think, in the middle of then, and he's talking about, he's talking about how his logic works.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this, he did this in a show. One, babies are illogical. Two, nobody is despised who can manage a crocodile. Three, illogical persons are despised. Therefore, babies cannot manage crocodiles. Oh my gosh. And oh my God. Okay, what did surprise me? Here you go, because I forgot for a minute. Or however long we've been on, I forgot that much time. He majored in philosophy.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, this didn't work out for him. He said he could have been happy as a teacher because, hey, your classroom, that's like
you're doing your
stand
act.
Up. Yeah. Yeah.
And once we find that out, then a lot of his humor makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm hmm.
Not necessarily basing it in philosophy, but sounds like a, you know, quite a bit of it is certainly informed by philosophy and his view of the world.
Yeah.
Just awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't remember which part it was in. I think maybe the Now where he won an award and they were showing him giving
the Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Was it Mark Twain?
Oh, or the Razzie.
Oh, they didn't show Razzie, did they?
What did he win for
at the National Gallery
Kennedy Center or something.
Yeah, Kennedy Center.
So that was in the next one. But
okay, and they were showing acceptance speech. And mm-hmm. it was like, well, it's too bad that I wasn't up against any other actors because,
yeah.
and he was just so, you know, so earnest and so, you know,
it was speaking of awards, Steve has an ego.
Yeah, he does.
He has an Emmy from the Smothers Brothers.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He has two Grammys and an honorary Oscar.
Yes.
Now, he wrote plays. He totally could have had a Tony.
He could have the team.
It's still not impossible.
Right.
You know? Yeah. He can still write something. If he wants that EGOT, he can get that EGOT.
Yes, that's he could.
Right. He has an ego, so he can get an EGOT.
And I love that it's ego.
Yeah.
Some people have a got.
Yes.
Some people have a eot or toe.
Have a toe.
Yeah. We just don't do it in that order, but yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Like, I'm trying to figure out what award he won for Pennies in Heaven then, because I thought they gave him a Razzie for it.
Well, that might have been. And Razzie, maybe. I just don't remember seeing it in.
And you know what's weird? I like that movie.
Yeah, because it was like his first serious movie, and he was excited about that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, and studied tap dancing for 6 months.
Yeah.
I just assumed he knew how, because who plays a banjo and doesn't know how to tap dance? I'm teasing, but still. I mean.
Right. Well, most actors know. You know, some dancing, singing, you know, all of that, musician.
Or something else at least.
Yeah.
We can't say most. It seems like a bunch of actors do something else artistic, whether it's musical or visual art or dance, whatever. There's some who don't. Or drive race cars.
Well, come on. That's just a hobby they can do after they've made all that money.
Yes. Yeah. So that's just awesome about him. And it didn't, he doesn't create visual art, but his deep and wide knowledge about at least paintings and painters was really astounding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I look at this and think what I could have done with my degree in philosophy and art history. So go. Like, oh, well, I should have followed Steve Martin's path.
True.
You still have a chance.
Yep. Oh, and magic. Don't forget the magic.
No, you can't forget the
magic. That's
what
I didn't do. That's if I'd only studied magic also. Yeah.
Then you too could have had just another banjo magic act. Okay, that was my other thing. And then he acts as if he's the audience and says, when are there going to be balloon animals? So we left that out too. He also makes balloon animals or did.
That's right. That's right. I wonder how many children's parties he worked
at. I mean, he works his daughter's party. His wife said that he does that. But remember he worked the Playboy, Playboy Club? Was that what it was?
Oh yeah, they just didn't get it.
I mean, I understand that. Yeah. And he said after that, he realized that certain things only play in certain places. Because, they weren't enthused at all.
Yeah.
The pup was the balloon animals.
That was like the missing piece of his brand.
Yeah.
I mean, he developed a brand, obviously, in his 20s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so first, being silly.
Mm-hmm.
Which you just, I mean, he had, there was a precedent for that but it wasn't the thing then switching to a suit and cut hair and shave face. And that's really like, when I think of Steve Martin, I do often imagine him in that white suit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah.
And that was him. But then he had to find his audience.
Yeah.
So that was the last part of it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess that's all of them in that, I won't even say just that profession.
Mm-hmm.
Like, writers, actors, everybody has to find their audience.
Yep. Definitely.
Yeah.
And podcasters.
Yes, that's true.
That's right. That's right.
Y'all must be okay with our silly humor.
They love it.
Somebody.
And our tangents.
We're happy with it. So mm-hmm. Yes. There you go. Maybe we are our own audience. It tells us more than us. Yes.
I'm totally happy if I am making myself laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care, really. This is the one thing I don't care about when it comes to other people. I don't care if anyone else laughs at what I made myself laugh about.
Right. Yeah. Humor is subjective.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like in so many other parts of life, we do care about the effect we have on other people, how people perceive us.
Yeah.
And humor is a thing. Like, there was this person a long time ago whom I just lost respect for and ended up liking less because of their sense of humor.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that happens.
So we do run that risk.
Yeah.
But my sense of humor is something that I just don't care what other people think about. Yeah.
But yeah.
But I'm not a pro.
Yeah.
My livelihood
it'd be
doesn't
a lot more
depend.
Difficult then.
Right.
No, but even then, you would still, you know, just have to be yourself and that, because if you try to fake it and do other types of stuff, that doesn't always work, because people can tell how awkward and uncomfortable you are on stage, and then that will make them awkward and uncomfortable, and they won't want to laugh at it.
Yeah.
So
very true.
You would have to find your people, just like he found his people.
Yeah.
And he found his people on stage, and I guess through TV, because he did all that writing that came later.
Yeah. I don't have jokes, though. For me, it's in the moment weirdness and silliness.
Same.
Or I'll remember something from the past and start laughing hysterically, including now I'm thinking, I was trying to come up with an example and I succeeded. Bloom County, there are a few things I frequently go back to. And one was after Chernobyl happened. And
Chernobyl humor. Yeah.
You know, but it was. Do you remember Berkeley Breath that did that? I don't know if you read religiously like I did, Susan, but so Bill the Cat had been, he left town. He went on the run. And so Milo gets a card or no, a letter from Bill. And the letter says, whatever, have found a new job in, so he admitted he had gone to Russia. Mm-hmm. And see included, or, you know, photo included, something like that. And you take out the photo and it's him sitting in the Chernobyl nuclear power plant. And there's this huge sign that reads, do not lean on lever. Do not lean on lever. And you see him and he's leaning all the way back on the lever. So basically Bill the Cat started
responsible
Chernobyl.
For, yeah, yes. Okay.
I'm sorry, it has nothing to do with Steve Martin, but.
Well, you said he told a disaster joke. I missed it.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. I didn't write it down. Shoot. Oh, craptastic. Why didn't I write it down? You rack my brain for a sec. Was it something about, just the end of the world.
Okay.
That's right. He said it a few times, something about it's the end of the world, blah, blah, blah. And then he made humor out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, he is our guy.
Yeah.
Making disaster humor, end of the world humor. That's why I didn't tell y'all it was end of the world. I just was enigmatic about it and said disaster. I mean, the end of the world would be a disaster. For a
not
lot
for the
of
world.
People. A lot of people.
Yeah, not for real.
Maybe not animals, non-human animals.
Yeah.
And then you jump to now and how he and Martin Short are working together with their own act, mm-hmm. not just murders, only murders in the building.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they were, when they were working out the act, planning it out, Martin said, you know, we can't be political. Or did did Steve say we can't be political?
It may be of Steve, because Steve, like during then, like he talked about not being political. Yeah. He talked about all his contemporaries were being political, and that's why he went with Tilly.
That's right. That's right. So it's interesting that, yeah, he is still doing that, you know, leaving out politics. And I don't blame him. And he can appeal to more people.
Yeah.
And leaving politics out. He's not a Democrat comedian or Republican comedian. He's himself. Yeah. Again.
Yeah. And there are already people who are covering that ground. So there is a room for people who are being silly. But speaking of the now, like I enjoyed them very, very much, but the now covered a lot of stuff that I was familiar with. So I got extra happy. Like when some very familiar things would start popping up. And I told you, as soon as his hair was all pure white, I was like, that's my Steve right there. That's the guy I know. So like when he would start talking about the movies, when you would see him, and when Martin first popped up, like when they first met,
like the
Martin's
amigos,
first movie ever, but like the three amigos, I was on the bike and I was doing the thing with them. Cause like childhood, I remember this stuff. So yeah, like I loved seeing his office where he has the shelves of the scripts and everything.
Yeah.
When he was talking about John Candy, and he was describing that scene that we didn't get to see, but he remembers witnessing. He remembers making him cry.
And he got teary right then, or he choked up.
He did. He did.
Beautiful.
And because he read, I guess maybe some of the, he read some of it and talked about like how serious John Candy, how sensitive John Candy was. And so I wanted to stay with you forever, I wanted to stick with you, or something like that. And like you could tell he was missing his friend.
I want to see that scene.
Me too.
It was shot and deleted, it sure would be nice if it still exists somewhere.
Is there an old DVD somewhere?
I'm kind of hoping like
special
he included with his anecdotes in that book. And I love the form that they're using for it. He said like he would just write out the lines for it and he would send it to Bliss, who would come up with the images. Bliss said he would get emails from Steve at 4 o'clock in the morning and he would just start working on it. So I can't wait to see this book, Kelly. And it's so different from what we usually see from memoirs and things. Like an actual visual representation.
And it's so on cool. His filmography, so his life in film, so it's not going to cover then.
Yeah, unfortunately, but like it makes me happy because this is what I know. It's like I know your filmography. I was there for that.
True.
I'm trying to think of all the other things, and like he played a father so many times. They said he had 27 kids.
21.
21 kids.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And he said that prepared him for fatherhood. I love that.
I loved him as a dad in Parenthood. I just adored that movie. Keanu was in it as well. I mean, it was just, quote, star-studded. But Keanu and, Steve Martin as a dad and as a husband.
Father of the Bride. I loved him in that. Oh, and was it Cheaper by the Dozen, too? All those children.
That's right.
So many.
That's right.
So he got a lot of practice on set.
Roxanne, like I loved, before I even read anything about Cyrano de Bergerac, like this is what introduced me to it. This is why I know the story.
And All of Me, they didn't, I think they mostly showed only Victoria Tennant in it since they ended up getting married. You know, we didn't see a shot of Lily Tomlin.
No, we just saw the car scene.
We heard her voice though.
And that's true. That's true in that scene. And then L.A. Story. I just adored. Oh, my gosh. I haven't seen it in decades, but I remember loving it. And so seeing tiny clips from that is also great.
Oh, and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Oh, my God. Oh, I
love it
as
so
soon
much.
As Michael Caine said, don't take the cork off the fork. I almost couldn't hear anything that came after that.
Why is there a cork on the fork?
To prevent him hurting himself.
It's like,
and others.
Oh, I see.
the eye patch.
Yeah. I understand now.
It was so brilliant. That whole movie is just so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I showed it to my oldest daughter when she was a senior in high school. So, oh my God, that's 12 years ago. And she had scoliosis surgery and was in bed for like 6 weeks. But we put her, we set her up a bed in the living room because that's the only room that had a TV.
Yeah.
And there wasn't like, I don't even know if there were iPads then. I forget when the first iPad came out. But like there was not a good way she could watch stuff in her room on a computer. So set her up out in the living room. And that was one of the movies I got her to watch with me.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Steve, so there was that theme throughout both parts, I mean, his whole life, that he is a lonely guy.
Yeah.
Until right now with his wife and daughter. And I was about to say, like, I don't feel lonely when I am watching something of his. It's all like, even if I'm watching alone, it still feels like a shared experience.
Yeah.
And that kind of laughter that I get from watching his stuff would be not like if I'm watching something alone, would be nice to share with someone else.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm laughing with him.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I don't know that he said loneliness. He said something about longing. That there he what drew him like with Roxanne was like the longing nature, and it was another script that he talked about that he wrote about, and it was the longing that attracted him to the story, and you could, I guess he was trying to find his place, not necessarily his person, because he had several persons over the years.
Right, that's true, and he found his place in the life of Anne.
Yeah.
And creating a combo life with her joint, joint life. Yeah.
Yeah. And his partnership with Martin.
Mm.
And like, it was so funny to listen to how they began. Because Martin was asking about the Three Amigos, and Steve was like, no. And it was Lauren that got Martin involved in Three Amigos. And then again, listening to him talk about, like Martin talk about, like trying to not feign but act that relationship of him and Steve and Chevy, like playing the part of old friends and just trying to get that down. And again, that being his first movie, and like just seeing what that friendship, what that partnership has become, because it's not even just a friendship anymore. They're like an old, he said the odd couple. They are an odd couple.
They are.
I love that so much.
Yeah. And to see all of those other friends that he has, and how it would say, it would read on the bottom of someone's name, painter and friend.
Yeah.
You know, the musician and friend.
Yep.
So like, he is friends with all these artsy people, and they all did, like, we don't see those friends with him in that part. But to gather people like that, it sounds like they are good friends.
For sure.
But Martin is the best, Martin Short is the best friend to be included that heavily.
Oh, yeah. Like, the second movie felt like their documentary, actually, which was funny because it was Martin. Like, that was the second half.
Yep. True. So Martin could refer to, either one of them. I hadn't thought about that. But I did keep wondering, when is Martin Short going to get his own documentary?
One of these days. That would be a good story.
What format will it take?
Right. Will it follow this one? Or will it be? Yeah.
And Steve will have to appear in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
One thing I did like in this section, we already talked about his relationship with his dad and how we got to see that kind of dissected, and how we got to see Steve work through it, and how later in life he said, like he just he had to go have a conversation with his parents because he felt like he didn't know them at all. Mm-hmm. And like he actually built the relationship with them later in the life. Mm-hmm. And after his dad passed away, he missed him. And what was it? Someone had contacted him about a New Yorker story.
He wrote an article in the New Yorker called The Death of My Father.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And someone contacted him and said, do you have my son's number? And that choked him up so much.
Yeah. After that, the person who wrote him, I think it was a she, said that she gave the article to her.
Yes.
To her who?
I thought, was it her dad?
No, I don't know if it was a family.
It was.
I don't know. Or maybe it was husband. Husband.
Maybe.
And the husband replied with, where's my son's phone number?
Right.
And that, yeah. Like he had to stop for a moment. Yeah. That was a great moment.
Yeah. He said that's the best compliment he had ever received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sweet. Mm-hmm. And as much as we find out about him in these two parts, I still don't feel like I know him. And just because of... Mm-hmm. Hearing about and saying how closed off he was early on and mm-hmm. how long it took him to make really good friends.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like with so many other celebrities, you read an article, even just one interview about them. You're like, oh, I know them now. Two short films. I mean, because they're around an hour and a half each. And I would say I know a lot about him, but I don't know him.
Yeah. And I can appreciate that because that's like the thing with his daughter. He said that these are the pieces of me that I'm allowing you to see behind the curtain. The other stuff, that's for me. That's not for you. I can appreciate that. And like that's with any artist. Like, yes, we can read an article about them and think, oh, I know who that person is as a person. But like, again, that's just a small piece of what they've allowed us to see.
Right.
Which is fine.
But then, we see the downside of it all, too, where people feel they're entitled to know everything, like about the royals and all that.
Yeah. And so. Like they don't understand that line of, hey, let me go get in this person's space. They've opened this door to me. No, they didn't.
Like, no.
They did.
Still a person, too. They need their space.
Yeah.
Do you not feel a little, okay, if you are British, mm-hmm. would you not feel a little bit entitled to know what kind of cancer Kate and Charles have?
No.
I mean, the public pays.
I mean, what are you going to do about it?
No, we pay taxes. We pay taxes. I'm not entitled to know whatever is going on with Biden. Not really.
Of course not.
As long as he can still function as he needs to.
He doesn't have to reveal the details of his medical exams.
Yeah.
But I thought that the presidents did have to the general overview of
They're supposed to.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah. But I'm just saying that's not something that I'm like I don't go to investigate. Like the thing with Kate, like that's not even their business over there. The only reason they became their business is because they got all weird and secretive about it.
Yeah.
She has cancer and she's sick and leave her alone.
Right. And I'm not saying that they or anyone is entitled. Just bring it up as a question.
I gotcha.
Though I do think it would be helpful if she and Charles told what kind of cancer they have.
Yeah. I mean,
because they had already pointed out, like, when Charles said he was going in for a prostate issue.
Yeah.
Apparently, the number of prostate exams that happened in the UK skyrocketed. After he said that.
Mm-hmm. Good. And so, like, as soon as you started to mention that, because it would help raise awareness, like you're saying, like, go get this exam or go get your breast exam or whatever's going on with her too.
Right.
So I get that. I get where you're coming from with that part. Yeah.
And they said that Charles's is not prostate cancer.
Okay.
Yeah. That was an original problem he went in for. Okay. Tangent. Sorry.
No, but it's
you
important.
Brought up the rule royals, Susan.
Yeah, I did.
It's important. No, go get your things checked. All of your things.
Your things. Oh. Your things and your things and
yeah.
Stuff and things.
Especially depending on your age and family history.
Yes.
And just any symptoms you may be having of something.
Well, right.
Google it
now,
and then go more, in.
More and more young people are getting colon cancer now.
Yeah. So maybe don't Google it. Just go call your doctor.
Well, I think it's fine to Google to figure out, do I need to call my doctor about this?
I was going to say, that's a rabbit hole.
I know it is.
It is.
I know it is.
And some people just like spin out of control.
Yes. Yeah. Reading it's like, it. But oh my God.
If you're
I'm dying.
Right. Sure. So but if you're not one to react like that, then go ahead.
Right. But like if you have a cough for 1 week, that's not, depending on the kind of cough, that's not necessarily call your doctor worthy.
Right.
Now, this was awesome though. Like we got to revisit some things I loved. I learned some things I had no idea about. Like you said, the philosophy major. So I was like, oh, he dabbled in philosophy. Did he stick with it? Did he not stick with it? Oh, he seemed really interested in it.
Well, I was thrilled that he completed his degree in it.
Yeah.
And learned enough that he said, you know, I'd be happy teaching it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's perfect for what we're doing next week. We are doing season one of The Good Place.
Oh, that's right.
Speaking of philosophy, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cheaty, cheaty.
Yeah. So we'll have our philosophy professor and, you know, we'll be talking about life and death and what happens when you die and what happens when you live. So, you know, it's The Good Place.
Is it The Good Place?
It's season one. Let's find out.
Okay.
No, we know what we know. Yeah. We know what the last line of the season one is. We know.
Oh, I love that show.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, that'll be awesome.
Looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And you're the one who got me to watch it in the first place.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
I came in late, meaning not with season one.
No.
I think two seasons were out, and I caught only season three live.
Okay. And season four, right?
Four. Then I may have caught only season four live.
Oh, okay.
There's a chance that I caught only the final season, week by week.
Okay.
Well, you got the best end of the bargain. Right. Like, you were able to binge the first three seasons. And
it's like, wait a minute, you do that a lot.
Yeah. That's why the Binging Award is named in my memory. The Kelly Smith Memorial Binging Award.
Yes.
That was our first named award for the series.
It was. Absolutely.
And it was well earned.
And the only one that has never changed what it is awarded for.
And it never will.
Yeah.
I know the Susan Memorial Award for blah, blah, blah has changed. The Court Memorial Award for blah, blah, blah has changed.
Yes. And spoiler alert, I can already tell you that Rick and Michonne have won whatever that's going to be next year.
Whatever it's going to be. Oh, you're going to make the award around them.
Yes.
Okay. Around the thing. We had come up with something we were going to make sure to put in for next year. And I do not see it in this year's Soupies. I must have it in some other note around here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poop.
We'll find it.
Yeah. Hopefully.
We still have a few months.
Yeah.
A couple.
Almost a year.
Yeah.
Sure. No, you wrote it down in
the old one?
Next year's spreadsheet, Susan. You're supposed to.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll figure it out then.
Yep.
Or maybe it's on a piece of paper on this table somewhere.
Ah. Goodness.
I know. Oops.
No.
We'll find it. We'll figure it out.
Yep.
Okay. So get out there and watch season one of The Good Place. And we'll talk about that next week. So until then, everybody, geek on.